Welcome to episode 3 of the Rebel Army podcast. On this week's episode, we look back on the away trip to Finn Harps. We look forward to another home game against UCD. We look at how the academy teams and the amputee teams got on at the weekend. And we have a special guest in studio as Liam Carney, the head of the academy, joins us. So welcome back to another podcast, episode 3, joined as ever by Mr. Howie. How are you?
Not too bad now, Stephen. How are you?
Not too bad. How was the long trip up to old Donegal?
It was good. We're all recovered. Yeah. We all made it back in one piece. And long old road.
You took a diversion on the way back. You went to Mr. Horn as well.
I stayed in Sligo actually after the game and went to Dublin the following night and drove back then after that. So I was back late Saturday night, but it wasn't late Friday night, which was a day that already had a lot of driving. So if that broke it up nicely for me.
Was there many away fans on Friday night?
There was a good few. Yeah. Like if I was to guess, I'd say maybe 50 or 60. A good few drove up, and there's obviously people who might be living near there or living in Dublin that travel over as well. But yeah, I reckon there was 60 or so there, and it was really good. There was a good home crowd as well. There was a decent crowd and a good atmosphere up there. It was their opening game of the season as well, so it was a big event for Finn Harps. But a decent sized travelling crowd for us.
A tricky game. Obviously went 1-0 down. I suppose one of those things was kind of a fluky old goal in many ways. Was it kind of like looking back on it anyway? That's what it seemed like, you know?
Pretty much, yeah. It's kind of an uncharacteristic mistake from Sean Murray. He tried to pass it back to Brad Wade in goal.
Yeah.
Looked like it took a bobble off the pitch, which was happening quite a lot. The pitch was very soft and cut up a lot due to the weather in Donegal in the days leading up. But he tried to put it back to Brad and he just didn't connect with it. And it probably went 5 or 6 yards, and the Finn Harps striker just managed to pounce on it. Brad rushed out to try and get it, but the Harps striker just slotted it past him and rolled into the empty net. And 1-0 down at half time. So getting out of there with a point, then all things considered, is not a bad result.
Yeah, there was a bit of controversy, I think, with the penalty as well. I know Finn Harps weren't too happy with the penalty when the lads fell over onto the ball, didn't he?
Yeah, I think he just got stuck in the mud.
Was that what it was?
I think so. It must have been, because he wasn't under any challenge. I don't remember him being under any challenge anyway. But it was one of those penalties that if you get the penalty, you're delighted with it. If it's against you, you are absolutely raging.
Which happens an awful lot in football.
It does, yeah. It's just, it's part of it.
There'll be ones that go against us during the season when we think we'll have a penalty, you know.
Exactly, we got a penalty. Jack scored it again. That's 3 goals for him this season already, 2 games in. And we got back down the road with a point.
So did you do any howie out and about up in Donegal?
I did. We waited a bit afterwards and I caught up with Tim to get his reaction immediately after. He was fairly happy, all things considered. Yeah, again, the conditions, it was just a difficult one. But yeah, this is what he had to say after that one.
Listen, I'm happy with the response the second half. I thought we played a lot better second half. Obviously, we gave away a goal early in the first half, which was a mistake from Muzz, which gave them something to hang on to. We're really pleased with the reaction at half time in the second half, and for long spells of the second half we spent in Finn Harps end of the pitch, and listen, we get a penalty and Jack slots it away, and it's a difficult place to come, and I think the grounds people here done very well to get the game on. There's been a lot of rain in the last few days, and you got all the water surface wasn't on the pitch, but listen, it cut up quite a lot, and it made it difficult for both teams to try and move the ball quickly, and I think we probably dealt with it a little bit better second half.
Yeah, just like what you said there about the penalty, about him getting stuck in the mud, and I think Tim was kind of alluding to that kind of there, that the pitch cut up an awful lot.
Yeah, and you know what? It actually looked really good before the game started. But as he said, there was a lot of rain in Donegal, and I was chatting to a couple of lads up there involved at Finn Harps, and the days in the build-up to the game, there was a lot of rain, the weather wasn't great, and I think everyone probably expected the pitch to end up the way it did. But when it's like that, it affects the game, and it definitely did affect the game on Friday.
Look, they're still unbeaten after 2, so we'll take that. You have to take the positives as well. And but they weren't the only team playing this weekend.
Yeah, the academy season's kicked off as well for the boys teams anyway. The girls weren't in action, but on Saturday the men's under 20s lost 3-0 at home to Cove Ramblers and Bishopstown. The under 15s were on the road. That was a tough one. Yeah, the 15s were on the road. They were in Waterford. They won that one 4-2. Joe Miskela, Killian Murphy and David Dunn got the goals there. Killian Murphy, Cork City player, obviously not the BAFTA winner we were talking about last week,
and he also won in the SAG Awards the weekend. So congratulations again, Killian.
Yeah, good weekend for all Killian Murphy. On Sunday the 17s were due to be away to Limerick, but again, unplayable pitch there, so that one was called off. And then our under 14s beat Wexford and Bishopstown. The amputees kicked off their season as well. They were in action in Abbottstown. 0-0 against Shamrock Rovers, and then a 2-1 defeat to Bowes, where Rory Murphy was on the score sheet for City.
Okay,
it was a belter of a goal by Rory as well, by all accounts. I haven't seen it yet, but apparently it was a very good goal.
Is there any video footage of those games?
There will be. We'll have that up on social media as soon as we get it. But yeah, we'll look to have those goals up during
the week. I saw, speaking of other things with the club, I saw a lovely little story there yesterday on social where one of our first teamers ended up going to a birthday party.
He did, John. I saw that myself, yeah, yesterday evening. Basically, Nicholas O'Sullivan he's a young City fan. He'd always be in the shed on a Friday night. He's been a mascot a couple of times as well. You'd always see himself and his dad, Sean, outside the back of the shed after a game, waiting for the players to come out. And his dad, Sean, put up the story. It was really interesting, actually. He waited for John, got pictures with John, and he handed John a piece of paper. His dad didn't actually realise what was on the piece of paper. He asked afterwards what it was, and Nicholas said that it was an invitation to his birthday party, and John told him he'd be there. We didn't know about this. None of us at the club knew about this, as far as I know. And a week later, Nicholas's birthday party, and John showed up, took a couple of pictures and stuff like that. But brilliant. Love to see stuff like that from players to the supporters, and they're brilliant, like the time they give supporters, especially after games, but even stuff like that.
That's a great story.
It's lovely.
He must have gotten a great buzz over that, the kid, like, you know what I mean?
But imagine one of your favourite players. He could be his favourite player, actually, and seeing them rock up to your birthday party like that, must be brilliant. Class.
And you know, a lot of cred in with your buddies as well.
He's the coolest one there then.
No, it's fantastic. Sorry, when I saw that, I said, that's brilliant.
Like, imagine going into school now on Monday morning saying, I had Cork City players at my birthday.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant
great story. Did I see the esports is kicking off as well?
Yeah, the ELOI is back tonight. Mr. Welly is representing us in that again. I'll be chatting to Mr. Welly later on, so we'll have some of that later on in the podcast. But we'll have the fixture details up on our social medias over the next couple of days. Mr. Welly actually streams those games on his Twitch channel as well. So if anyone wants to watch those, we'll be linking to those, and you can do so there.
Okay, yeah. And there's obviously a big following for that type of stuff, is there?
There is. It's still pretty new to Ireland. The E-Premier League and Champions League and stuff like that will be quite big. This is all playing FIFA, by the way.
Yeah.
And there are other esports that are huge, but esports as an industry is quite new to Ireland. And it's been going now, the ELOI, since 2021. So it's very different to anything else you'd expect or anything else you'd watch, but it's interesting and it's growing massively. And there was the live finals last year were held in one of the conference rooms at the Aviva. I was there. It was brilliant. They had music and a music act at it as well. And I think something similar is planned for this year. But yeah, there's a growing audience for it and a big appetite for it. And these players, like I've played with Welly and a couple of the other lads at the ELOI, and the standard is absolutely incredible. But so that kicks off later today.
And in other news as well, should we be saying bonjour?
Number 19, was it?
Yeah, number 19 in football podcasts.
Football podcasts on Apple Podcasts in France.
Wait, no, maybe Jake O'Brien is listening to it or something.
If it is. Hi, Jake. What's the story?
How are you getting that?
I was looking at the analytics. We have a couple of listeners in Kenya as well. I don't know if there's a supporters club over there, but might have to send a flag over if there is.
A lot of different countries all listening. We're doing quite well in Canada, I see, as well. And in the UK, we were in top 250 or something in the UK or something, football podcasts.
We're doing well.
I think it was in the top 150 in Canada. So and I think there is a bit of confusion whether football, soccer, there's a bit of both. It seems like it's either one or the other, and I think you can put it in the two or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
So I don't know what's happening.
Well, look, if anyone is listening, if there's listeners from there, send us a tweet, send us a message, whatever, let us know.
Yeah, we want to see who the farthest away is.
Are you listening on your drive to work, or are you just listening while you're working away or whatever it is? Let us know.
Yeah, or maybe they're just tuning in for a bit of news from back home or something or whatever it is. Maybe people traveling the world or,
people mislisten to the Cork accent.
yeah, it's definitely. Because I think, it would be a push now to put it into French, so there must be someone with good English speaking.
I don't think we're there yet. We're not translating it ourselves anyway.
So, we have a very special guest coming into us this week. Somebody that everyone will know from his playing days, but now is head of the boys academy at the club, Liam Kearney. Should we bring him in? So this week's podcast, delighted to welcome the head of the academy, Liam Kearney. Welcome, Liam.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Liam, before we start talking about the academy, let's kind of go back long in your own journey. Am I right in saying you started kind of with Fermoy?
Yeah, I probably would have originally been with Valley Rangers, which would be kind of Connor area. And spent a year or two there before I decided to go into Fermoy. Then I think I was at Fermoy for maybe two seasons. So yeah, that was kind of the starting block.
And then you went across the water.
Yeah, I got from Oyde into the Cork schoolboy team and we went to the Kennedy Cup and we didn't actually do very well up there with a very strong team. But there was a few scouts then from there and I got the opportunity to go to Nottingham Forest from there then.
What age were you?
I was probably 14 going over in trial and then I think I signed a professional contract at 16. And I was there then for 4 years, basically.
What's that like a 16-year-old kind of going across the water? Were you like, did you get homesick or anything? Or
it was very strange, really, because I suppose it was always something I knew I wanted. Obviously, I was lucky to get myself in a position to get the opportunity. So yeah, it was. I suppose I was so focused on wanting to be a footballer that I remember the day I went over and my family came over. We all went over in a car and I unloaded my stuff into the digs that I was staying in and. Everything was sorted anyway. And I suppose it was time then for the family to go home.
Yeah.
And I remember coming back up to the car and they were all bawling, crying.
Oh, God. And, probably set you off to that.
And I was kind of looking at them going, I didn't kind of just realize this is, I'm not coming back with them. I'm leaving now for a good while. And, but at the same time, in my head, this mob, I was like looking forward to training in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's never easy. I suppose things are slightly different here now than they were then. Probably don't have the academies that we do in the country now as well to kind of match how things were in at Forest and stuff like that. So
because there was no League of Ireland academies at that stage, sure there wasn't.
I don't think so. Anyway,
maybe some in Dublin, but not down here anyway.
Not to the level that they're probably at now. So I suppose it was the only option to try and stay in full time football and I suppose develop into becoming a full time footballer itself.
And like. What was it a huge jump then compared to like St. Payne Kennedy Cup to playing underage with Forest? Like was there a big difference?
I think eventually it was just the big shock was the training load. Obviously we trained nearly twice a day in the gym as well. I was never the biggest or strongest young fella, but so even to try and get used to doing like weights and gym work and. I suppose training in the morning, training in the afternoon, the discipline of going to bed at 9:30, lights out at 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
But I loved all of it because I knew in the back of my mind, this is what will get me to where I want to be and have a career in the game. So I took it on board. It was obviously tough days, you know, when you're injured, especially when you're injured in Ireland and going home to your mum and dad is different to injured in England and going into your room in the digs and maybe not playing for 3 months. And at times the manager might not speak to you because you were of no value to him.
Oh yeah, so you're just left there like,
You feel a little bit isolated. And look, it's, I suppose, no matter how much of a support you have around you, networking, anytime you're not training with the team, and it's something I'm probably conscious of more now as a coach and obviously as head of academy that, you know, you got to get around lads when they're going through a long injury spell. Yeah. But yeah, look, all those things come into it. That's part of being a footballer and, you know, dealing with the ups and downs.
Was there any kind of fellas that stood out that you played with back then? Did anybody go on to do better things like or
absolutely.
Play in Premier League or anything like that?
Yeah, look, I suppose we had a strong academy at Forest at the time. There was Andy Reid, there was Jermaine Jenness, Michael Dawson.
Oh yeah.
So they were all kind of my age group growing in.
Were they given media training back then or what? Because most of them ended up in the media. Like,
that's right.
And then Jermaine is a TV host.
Yeah,
nowadays.
And Michael Dawson did a bit as well. Yeah, look, we actually did. I remember it was part of our schooling over there. I did a BTEC sports science diploma over there. But they had different aspects as well. So there was media training where they brought in the cameras and everything and you know, put you on the spot and they were kind of coming up with mad scenarios. Like, you know, you were caught out last night, 3 o'clock in the morning, you were arrested. And then, you know, you played the game today. Have you anything to say? And kind of just,
Very good, you
do all that then in front of, let's say all the players and the staff. And while it was a bit of crack too, but it was also a confidence builder because everyone had to do it, you know, or you'd have to get up and speak for a minute about a random subject. So it's definitely something, again, even within Cork City Academy, you know, we're talking a little bit more of the opportunity maybe to interview players after games and all it is.
Get them used to it.
And also standing in front of a camera and having to answer questions and public speaking, really.
Because it is part and parcel of the game because, you know, just like this, people are listening. They do what the fans want to know a bit more about the players. Even from a young age, they kind of want to hear about them, don't they? And what they're
absolutely
up to. And,
Absolutely. I think you look at our first team now as well, there's so many young players in and around it as well. So I suppose people are going, where they come from? What were they like as a younger player? And, you know, I suppose it's important from our point of view, from the coaching point of view, we have all the data, we have all, you know, the feedback and evaluations of them from the football point, but obviously then people want to know the person as well.
I think Forest were a Premier League team at the time, were they? They went down, wasn't it?
I came that particular year where they'd actually gone from the Premier League down to the Championship, I think. But the Van Hooydonks were just gone, I think, as I was kind of coming in.
Yeah, and that was their last year in the Premier League, and they got a couple of hammerings that year.
And they've only come back up
in recent times.
Yeah.
For such a big club that would have, you know, been European champions at one point, and there was a lot of history there as well.
Absolutely. I remember we obviously go to a lot of the home games after our academy games, and the atmosphere used to be electric, and I used to always think, you know, it'd be great to get the opportunity to get on that pitch.
So what happens then? Did you get to like 18, 19, and then like you're not offered a contract, or how does that work?
So my initial contract was for 3 years professional, and then it came to the kind of your end of academy road, I suppose. And I actually ended up getting a bad injury about 3 months before. So I was nearly feeling like, well, I'm just got injured at the wrong time. Had been doing quite well. And to be fair, they gave me another year. They said, look, if you hadn't been injured, we might have been looking at a longer contract, but we just need to see how the ankle had recovered. So look, I was delighted to get an opportunity to have another season. I suppose the year that I did spend probably playing reserves and you know, trying to get into the first team after that was a bit difficult. And when I look back, I think, you know, I probably lost a lot of friends, because I'd say out of all the academy players that were coming to the end of their kind of under 19 year, I think there was only two of us that were kept on, and the other one was Jermaine Jenness.
Yeah.
And obviously he was flying at that period. He was involved with the first team already and had done really well. So while I was delighted to be given another opportunity, I think the following year, I found it tough outside of the pitch.
Yeah.
Because obviously I was coming into reserves, and I was
older lads.
You know, I suppose, you know, I didn't deal with it well enough mentally to be able to be strong enough kind of character to kind of, you know, be in and out, kind of not have that group of friends that I would have hung around with after training. So I suppose I didn't probably perform to the level that I would have liked to, or kicked on to the level that I would have wanted to. But yeah, it was a lot of learning from it.
Did you get any first team opportunities?
Just reserves. I never made a first team appearance at Forest, but I suppose people go, well, how did you look back? And I look back at Forest as being a huge learning lesson for me from the football aspect, but also I think even I grew up a lot from going there at 16 to coming away at 20.
Built your character, I'd imagine.
And resilience, definitely, because with a couple of injuries and learning to, you know, have to keep going. And even I think people probably think I came back to Cork and I signed straight from Cork. I didn't. I had an agent at the time that brought me to Bohemians, and I spent a week there. At the time, I think they were the top team in the Premier Division. Stephen Kenny actually was the manager. And
you look around 2003, kind of, around that time.
2003.
Yeah.
So I went there for the week. I played a couple of games, I think. And Stephen, at the end of it, he said, look, Liam, you did well. I said, obviously, I like you. He would have known me from international underage games. But he said, I don't think you're going to start for me. He said, I think you're at the point now where you need to play. So he said, look, I'd advise you to go back home to Cork to be closer to your family.
Yeah.
And Pat Dolan is the manager who will probably give you an opportunity.
Of course, Pat was there,
The Rebel Army was kicking off. So it's funny because I suppose having come from Forest, being released to go into Bowes and basically told you're not ready, you're not good enough yet.
Yeah.
I was kind of, it was like shot after shot. And I suppose I was feeling when I got in down to Cork that it's either here or now, or it's not any going to happen for me. Like, you know, so I'll never forget meeting Pat. I think he picked me up actually and got into the car. And the first thing he said, you went to Bowes first, did you? And I was kind of going, oh Jesus, here we go now. He's obviously thinking this fella isn't going to get any contract here or whatever. But to be fair to Pat, like, I mean, I trained for a week. He gave me a contract till the end of the season. And, you know, it was the lifeline I needed.
Yeah.
And luckily enough for me, it, you know, it was, I took the opportunity when it came.
He created a fierce momentum with the club at the time, didn't he? He kind of created this buzz around it. He was a bit of a hype man or something. Yeah. It wasn't needed. That's what he was good at doing.
Do you know what? I think he was the right man at the right time coming into Cork. Yeah. Really changed, I think, the mindset and I suppose the carry on off the pitch a little bit. Yeah. I think certainly professionalised the club hugely. Not just, I suppose, the players, but even the background in terms of bringing in big sponsors. I think he brought Nissan in at the time. That's really a big part of that.
Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, in a way, when you look at the squad at that time, we started, I suppose myself had come home, George and John were already there. Kevin Doyle had just signed, Joe Gamble was coming home.
Yeah.
So things just kind of came together really, I think. And I think we had a manager.
Very attacking team, like one.
Very attacking, yeah. And I suppose deeply rooted in Cork as well.
Yeah.
In general, you know, a lot of the players, we were all generally from Cork. And I think that, you know, worked well with the crowd too, that, you know, they were coming out to watch their own.
Mm.
And I think we played some nice stuff as well, obviously, through the years. So that was probably something that people appreciated watching.
That team went on then to, I suppose, give you your first honour, I suppose, was the league title in 2005. Like, that must have been a great buzz. Like.
Yeah, it was brilliant. Look, I think, as I said there about Pat, you know, when I first came back, he you know, what would you say, got my head out of my proverbial.
Yeah.
And I think for everyone that has come back, like Joe and all of George and John, like, we were all so eager to, you know, achieve and to kick on in our careers.
Prove yourselves.
Prove ourselves. And I suppose from that time then, obviously, I think Pat got sacked going into 2005, right, which was strange.
It was a big blow for you, I'd imagine. He was kind of like, he was the guy that brought you in, then they brought Damien in and you had to adjust to a new manager.
Yeah, there was definitely an adjustment period there. It was tough. You know, I suppose as a young professional, you kind of look at the person who's given you that chance.
Yeah.
And you kind of, when something like that happens, then it's kind of can be hard to deal with, and you can kind of be, you know, feeling like, obviously, where do we go from here and what's the new manager going to be like? But again, that's football. And I suppose we had to adjust to it, because at the end of the day, we wanted to succeed. We wanted to win trophies. And obviously when Damien came in then, I think, you know, it came together quite well for us. We'd done 2003, I think we were third. 2004, we were second. And then 2005, we managed to win it.
And in front of a full cross, and the old shed was there at the time and stuff like that. Amazing scenes. And some of those pictures are still, you know, fantastic, like, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, the kind of glory days. But it wasn't long after that you left, was it?
Yeah, no, look, I'll focus on the first part of that question there. 2000, that night against Derry, I think, will live in my memory forever.
One of the best?
One of the best. I suppose I can't look past it because of the magnitude at the time for us to win the league for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
I suppose the pressure as well, because we were leading a long ways always up to the end of the season, and we'd fell behind, we'd drop points, and I think we had to win the game. Mm. It was in the case of a draw would have done, I think a draw would have done Derry. So just even that week leading up to that game, knowing the place was going to be sold out and thinking, you know, we have to win here, like, we won't be left out of the place if we don't. But at the same time, having a confidence, we will win. Yeah. You know, I suppose that was one thing that year that we felt we were the best team in the country. But we still knew we had to win the league to prove that. And we couldn't say we were if we didn't. And I think things just came together that night. And I think it was a good week leading up to it. And obviously the performance on the night was really good from the team point of view. And yeah, I suppose the rest is history.
Yeah, but you weren't the only one to leave at the time, because Kevin Doyle had gone earlier in the season. And then I suppose the success of the team doing so well, the likes of George was taken, and there was a few starting to move again, wasn't there? Back across the water.
Yeah, I suppose what I said originally, I suppose, when you have all that kind of group of players that, you know, came back to kind of resurrect their career really and to push on to another level if the opportunity came.
Yeah.
Kevin had just gone, I think, in the summer or maybe previous to that, to Reading.
Yeah, he'd scored a lot earlier in the season.
Yeah, he was flying. He was ready to go. Like, I mean, there was no doubt that he was going to kick on.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone was delighted to see how far he did kick on, which was brilliant.
And he went straight into scoring goals over, which was phenomenal. Like, it was brilliant for the league as well at the time.
Yeah. You know? I put a bit of respect on level that we were at.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And look, I suppose in the season came, and I suppose I had an opportunity to go to Heerenveen in Holland, and came up, and obviously my eyes lit up and thought, right, this is the next step back to kicking on again. Yeah. And went over to Holland actually and watched the game with the chairman. And I think they'd Huntelaar up front with Samaras at the time. It's a long time ago now. And I was thinking, oh, I'd love now this opportunity again.
Brilliant.
But look, between the jigs and reels, there was an issue with compensation. And, you know, I suppose when I look back and the time again, obviously I moved on to Shelburne after going through a tribunal, and it was a whole mess.
So was
situation.
It a case that you weren't allowed to join?
So basically, what it came down to was that Heron Bean were prepared to pay a certain amount of compensation.
Okay,
Cross City at the time wanted.
So you wasn't that you were out of contract?
I was out of contract, but I was under 23 at the time, and compensation was due.
Because it wasn't just a case like the Bosman ruling where you could just go wherever you wanted.
No, so I was under 23, so there was compensation that they would have required at the time, and I suppose they couldn't come to an agreement between the two clubs. And as a young fella,
chipping your shoulders, and he said, "Like I'm not going back there."
Well, it was the case at the time that it was like, well, I felt at that age and that time that, you know, that was an opportunity taken away from me.
Yeah.
And look, from Cork City's point of view, they probably felt we've done a lot to resurrect his career.
Yeah.
And we need to be compensated. Yeah. So from a point of view now, looking back on it, I can see both sides of it. I suppose at that time, all I could see was an opportunity taken from me. And felt, you know, hurt by that and whatever else. But in hindsight, I went to Shelburne, which I know looking back on it that I do regret. It was more a case at the time that, well, I feel like I can't come back to Cork.
They were a big club at the time as well, though. They had a lot of money floating around, and they had a couple of European runs and things.
Yeah, look, they were, listen, when I did go there, I think when I look at it now, I think they had a huge squad full of players that were top players. Mm. And look, it was a year wasted from my point of view. I wasn't happy in Dublin. I couldn't say more good things about Pat Fennell, to be fair to him. He was very good to me. And even through the difficult times there, he was very supportive.
Yeah.
Understood, you know, what had gone on previously and stuff like that. But look, you learn from all these
things. Did you have to put up with abuse from the City fans when you came back?
Well, I work with a woman now in an office who printed money off my face on a note. And we laugh about it now, but when I came back to Turner's Cross, I'll never forget having to get a Garda escort into the dressing room.
Stop.
Yeah, and back to the bus.
Yeah,
and I was thinking this time last year, it certainly was a different case. But look, that happens.
That happened in the previous generation. I don't know if you ever spoke to Pat Morley about it, but I remember. To be honest, I probably threw abuse at him myself, but
that's part of it.
For all of this kind of stuff. Absolutely. I didn't do it, you know, Liam.
But listen, I understood it too. Listen, if you were a Cork City fan, all you see
it's kind
and all you care about is you were with us, you've gone to the enemy.
Yeah,
and listen, I'm not stupid to understand that people go, oh, best of luck. It's not how it works. That's not the game we're in. But
only happens if you go abroad, really, doesn't it? It doesn't happen if you go to a rival team.
Yeah, and listen, and I suppose that's kind of where I wanted to go. And then decisions you make, probably you look back and go, on, if I was a bit more mature at the time and probably sat back from it and went, right, I'll come back and play with Cork City and see if I can kick on. They were in the Champions League too, which I regret not getting the opportunity to play in the following year.
Yeah.
So, look, that's life.
Big games and you missed out. But you had the previous year going, you had a great run in Europe in the Intertoto Cup and stuff like that, didn't you, at the time? And, you know, was that how you were spotted?
I think so, yeah. I think we had a great run, obviously, under Damien and Pat. I think we played Malmo twice and we did well in Nijmegen. And then I think we did Djor Gardens.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Under Rico. And like, the thing was, like, we never feared any of them. I look back in times now and go, we went into those games thinking we're going to win.
And big clubs.
Yeah. And I think it was just the team, the style of play that we had. We were comfortable, possession-based team. Mm. And even in Europe, you had more time in the ball. So like the likes of Georgie could do his thing. Flinney, Doyle, you know, Dan Murray. Like, you know, players that could play football, like, you know.
Yeah. So did you come back in 2007 then?
2007,
Was it because there was a new regime at the club?
No. Well, there was a new regime behind the scenes, but at the same time, Rico was still in charge.
Yeah.
And obviously I knew at least halfway through the season that if there was an opportunity came to come back, that I know that that's where I played my best football. I wanted to come home.
Yeah.
So when the opportunity came, it was a very easy decision for me to get back in and then try and, you know, get back playing and enjoying it again.
And at the end of that season, then you won the FAI Cup.
We did. I had to actually, to be honest, I didn't have a great season. Football wise, for whatever reason, I did turn up eventually in the semi-final against Bowes and scored the brace. So I'll hold on to that from that season. And that was a nice victory, because I remember Roddy Collins wrote us off and he was commentating.
That's right.
And I remember where he was in the stand, and I remember I scored a second and I nearly ran over and said, shut up. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't write us off. Yeah. But so that was the highlight of that year, without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah, because that's where we came across each other then, because I was working with the club then. And of course, into the next season was a kind of a funny old season, really, because the club were flying.
Yeah.
So all the lads came back.
Yeah.
You had George and
really strong,
John O'Flynn and Joe Gamble. And then you had Dave Mooney up front, and he was banging in the goals. And
Gareth Farrelly as well.
There was a phenomenal team there. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, started Europe, did okay in Europe, and the next thing, August. And the club went crazy. The examinership came in.
Very difficult. I remember we actually won the Setanta Cup final. Alan Matthews is manager.
That's right, Alan was there. So you won the Setanta Cup with a young team.
Yeah, we did.
Because a lot of the players had gone.
Yeah. No, like it was a very strange time, because I don't know, had we not been paid or only percentage of being paid.
That's right.
And we were going into this final then, which I think at the time the prize money was about 100 grand. So there was a bit of pressure from the point of view of you win, you might get paid.
And Glenn Thorne came down from the north. There was a lot of worries that there'd be a bit of trouble. There wasn't, actually. It was fine.
Yeah. It wasn't too bad. I did get a bottle in the back of the head, that was probably my own fault for celebrating. It just so happened I went past the shed and ended up in front of the Glenn Thorne fans. So a bottle in the head was probably appropriate, but that was a huge, we went 1-0 down. I'll never forget, they scored a free kick early. And I was like, we are not losing this game today. Yeah.
It was great, because it was two cups that year. Like, it was, but it was surreal. I remember at the time thinking, this is a young team, because all the key players had gone because the club couldn't afford them anymore.
So strange.
Then the next time I had left the club, I went down to other pastures because again, I'm up in Derry in a hotel, and I bump into you in reception. And I'm like, what are you doing up here?
There would have been absolutely no way at that time that I wanted to leave the club. And then all of a sudden it was like, there's no contract there, or, we're not in a position to offer
a contract.
Yeah. So it was like, it was just the way it went. I think not just Cork City at the time, but obviously Shelburne went through it.
Everyone,
And actually I went to Derry and signed, but then they went through it. So I was like, I don't know,
it was the League of
bad
Ireland,
omen or what's going on.
Yeah.
But I went to Derry for a season and I enjoyed it. Like, really lovely people up there, passionate club, very similar to Cork.
Same size, kind of one club, one city kind of thing up. They love the thing.
They did. And look, again, the people were great and everything like that. I actually broke my leg playing for them up in Galway. I'll never forget it. I've only ever been in an ambulance twice, at Galway. I didn't actually have a great season, to be honest. I didn't play well up there either. I don't know what it is. I think I only really ever performed
in Cork.
And people in Cork might say, did you even perform in Cork? But I enjoyed my football in Cork probably more than anywhere. And I suppose I came up from a GA background where playing for Cork and GA meant so much to me that I saw it the same in soccer, that like playing soccer for Cork City was playing for Cork. And I suppose you just have that heart and drive to kind of be proud, that you're around your family playing in front of,
So did you go off to Australia then for a while then? Like, what happened?
Yeah, so I went from Derry down to Waterford in the first division under Stephen Henderson for a year. We finished second. It was a good season. We were lucky at the time. We didn't go up. Then went to Australia. I think I was in Australia for 3 years.
Yeah.
And
was that more kind of just a kind of journey in life more than football type thing?
It was a bit of both, because the club I went over to, strange enough, named Dandenong Thunder, was a really strong team. We actually went on to win 3 cups in the 1 year, the second season. I played in Amy Park, which obviously would be Melbourne's biggest football stadium. Really enjoyed that. Really, that was a really enjoyable time. Obviously, life as well, to kind of experience Australia. Yeah. I was working. So I was like doing coaching, I was working in a job, and then I was playing football. So it nearly started to prepare me now for life after professional football.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed it. I actually felt, how would I feel about doing all these other things? And I was like, you know what, this is great. Working, like my time was full. Yeah. I was nonstop, but it was supposed to prepare you for when you stop playing too, that this is what life is. You're not always going home for a nap in the afternoon or a game of golf on a Wednesday.
Yeah, yeah. You know? So after Australia, did you come back?
Came back then, and I actually was trying to sign with Cork at the time, but because I came home too late in the transfer window, then I had to wait till the following season. Mm. And then I think Stewie Ashton had come in as intern with Billy Woods.
That's right, yeah.
But then when the season around came, I think John Caulfield came in as manager with John Cotter. So I suppose they were probably looking at me going, your best days are behind you. But I kind of fought my way into getting a contract to try and come back and play. Because I always, when I was in Australia, felt I have another year or two left in me to try and give something back to playing with Cork. And it was in my head that I had that dream of coming back and playing in front of the cross. And I got that opportunity for 2 years. I contributed a lot more in the first year than the second year, but at the same time, it was brilliant to come back. And obviously under John, over the first couple of seasons, like the growth of the club.
The momentum was huge, wasn't
huge,
it?
Huge, yeah.
So was it around that time then you started doing your badges and stuff?
Yeah, I suppose I had already kind of, I think, done my B license when I was finishing up the first time around. I think when I was in Waterford, I was still doing a license playing-wise. Yeah. And then when I came back the second time, or third time, is it at this point, to Cork? But I did my A license as well. And I was kind of, I could see myself definitely in meetings, even with the first team, when we have a meeting about the opposition, it would nearly be sometimes myself and John going through the tactics.
Yeah.
And I'd say he was nearly sick of listening to me having feedback. And then probably at the same time understanding, well, this fella definitely looks like he wants to be a coach, you know, down the line.
And when did the first kind of coaching opportunity come? Did you go in with the underage? Or under
I was with the under-17s coaching. And then I was kind of working with the first team and the 17s. Okay. So I was kind of made the job kind of a full-time role, really. So I enjoyed that. That was probably, you know, a good experience as well.
And then you took a role with Ford Island Resort, did you? Kind of heading up. That was a huge shift for you then to kind of move away from football into, well, I know they have football pitches below, but it's something different, like.
Absolutely. And look, it was out of my comfort zone. Even sitting in an office every day and wearing a suit every day. Yeah. But I really enjoyed it from the point of view, like really good people. They were very helpful. I suppose there's an aspect that they looked at me thinking, well, this, he's not used to this.
Yeah.
And they were very accommodating. And I suppose at the same time, it coincided with COVID. And I suppose I came in and then within 3 months, the hotel was nearly shut. Yeah.
Bad time. So yeah.
I'd say when they look back at what I did for the place, I had a lot of dinners and lunches and I definitely tried to reach out to a lot of clubs to bring them in. But unfortunately, with COVID, everything kind of shut down.
Yeah.
No one would travel.
So then, like obviously John was let go off from City. He went up to Galway. Did he bring you kind of with him for a bit?
Yeah, so the year I was in Fota, he got in touch. Obviously, he'd just gone into Galway halfway through their season.
Yeah.
And he said, look, will you come up till the end of the season and give me a dig out? And I was like, look, as long as Fota were okay with me managing between both. The and two, I think at that time, the way things were going in Fota, it was probably like, yeah, look, we don't want to stop you doing that either.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was actually very enjoyable. I used to go up 2 days a week. And just help out really from the coaching point of view.
So when did your current position come up then, when the whole academy thing, how did that happen?
I suppose it was really when Colin was given the first team job.
Yeah.
It kind of obviously his role then became available from there.
So did you pitch yourself or did someone approach you? How did that work?
I think basically Colin had given me the shout saying, look, would you be interested in this?
Yeah.
And then from there really, the opportunity was there for me to take it if I wanted it. And obviously I was delighted. You know, it was something that I was actually in my coaching time, having been involved with 17s, I'd been to America as well, where I'd coached academy football and stuff like that. Yeah. So I'd got a bit of grounding of that.
Yeah.
Obviously working alongside Colin when he was the academy manager, and understanding, you know, the structures that he'd put in place. So I kind of had a fair idea of how things were run.
Yeah.
Obviously at a very good level, and understanding that coming in then made it very easy to transition into that, like, you know.
But am I right in saying so? Like it's not so much a coaching job, it's kind of overseeing everything that's happening underage at the club.
Yeah. So I suppose my role and how I've made it in a way is that I don't manage any one particular team. Now there's times where coaches leave or move and you fill the gaps.
Yeah.
And I enjoy doing that anyway because it gets you back on the pitch. So I'd basically oversee from 13s when they come in the summer now to the under 20s that we have in place now. For so 13s, 14s, 15s, 17s and 20s.
So you're getting to see the progress of the lads going all the way up. Like, and it's just the boys' academy you're looking after.
Just the boys' academy, yeah. Danny Murphy, obviously now head of the women's side of things as well. So yeah, look, it's you know, it's really enjoyable. It's, you know, nonstop.
Yeah.
I suppose the detail we're trying to get to in terms of, you know, video analysis, strength and conditioning, the football side of things, it's the whole picture that we try to cover with the lads, even from the psychological point of view. You know, we offer counseling to lads that need it as they're dealing with, you know, it could be anger issues, it could be issues at home.
Yeah.
You know, that sometimes they'll come to coaches and say, look, I'm struggling. And we, in fairness to the club, they have that in place. I think since I've been there anyway, that, you know, if that does come about, that the club look after that, which is hugely important. That's a huge part of, we talked earlier about my time and I can relate everything back to my early days of.
You know what it's like, you were in the opposition.
Yeah. And even here, like I said, that's over in England where you're isolated. It can be still isolating here, even though you have family with you. You never really know what a kid is going through, you know?
And they're away from their friends, I suppose, as well. The guys that they played club football with maybe at the beginning. And, you know, it's, I suppose, there's, you have the elite players in Cork mainly, I'd imagine. Does nobody comes in from outside of Cork then? Is there, or does
we it do, happen? We do. We have, I suppose, within the club, we have lads that have come from Kerry, Waterford, Tipperary.
Okay.
No, it's a lot to ask. And I'm always very conscious about it, especially from the younger age. And Limerick as well, that, like, you know, that we are asking them to be there 3 nights a week and they're coming out of school straight away to get up to training. So, like, it is a tough one. And I suppose you need to make sure the lads that you are asking that from, that, you know, first of all, the family are able to do it, that it's not affecting their schooling to the point that it's too much.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, I suppose it's a good thing that players are willing to want to come this far to be part of our academy, and hopefully shows that we're doing things best we can.
Well, like I see that, like last year, I know you did a lot of trips abroad, like you were playing a lot of tournaments and stuff. Are you kind of learning from them different clubs that you're going to then? I think we in Spurs or somewhere like that, and are you kind of seeing what they're doing and see can you bring it here?
Well, yeah, last year, I suppose one of the biggest things that I wanted to do was take every team away from 13s to 20s. And it was the first year we've probably done that. So I was delighted with that. And look, I suppose there's a few reasons for you doing it. It's, I suppose, exposing the players to playing against teams at that level. I think the 13s, you know, they went to play at Villa and, you know, I can't think of the other team they played now at the moment, but our 14s, they went to Spurs, they played Luton. Our 15s, they went to play at Derby and Sheffield United. 17s went to play in Portugal against Lisbon, or Sporting Lisbon, and Benfica, and our 19s at the time went to play Villa and West Brom. Oh. So like that covers all the teams there.
Does,
but
yeah.
The value of it is, I suppose, they've matched them all really to a point.
Yeah.
And I think some of our players might have been apprehensive, as well as maybe the staff, thinking, geez, what will it be like playing against that level of players? And I think after 10 minutes in the game, we're going, we're comfortable here. And you look at their facilities as well, and you see the surroundings, and I suppose the amount of full-time staff they have, and you're thinking, you know, they have all the tools here to do it, which is great. And you come back then, you think, right, what have we got? What's achievable of improving within our structure?
Yeah.
Without, you know, sometimes you go, oh, so we'll never get that, or we'll never have that. But there's always things you can do and improve within the budget that you have at the moment. But yeah, look, and even the team bonding point of view, even for our coaches, to be able to chat with coaches at that level and learn from them as well. So it's the coaches, it's the players, it's the standard of football. And I suppose even from the point of view of us players moving on from Cork City, that, you know, they're getting a look at what we have.
Put them in the shop window. Yeah. Like you would have said, like, you know, the Kennedy Cup squad for you back in the day was where you got spotted.
Yeah.
But for them, you're nearly, you know, putting them against these clubs, and they're watching what's happening if they're playing mini tournaments and things.
Exactly. And look, you build relationships as well with clubs. You know, Spurs came over to us as well, their 18s played, or 19s in Bishopstown. And look, that was a great occasion. I think there was a huge crowd there on the day, and our boys performed well, obviously, on the day as well. So
we got a bit of business to fall today because I think they stayed.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, listen. And to be fair, Finola is very good. She'd always be inquiring, is there any clubs coming over and things like that? So look, that's a good link to keep as well, obviously. But look, from my point of view, the academy's in a good place. Obviously, you know, it's consistently evolving as well. You know, you're trying to say every year, how can we improve? So like this year now, we've Damien Coleman, head of strength and conditioning. Okay, we've Paul Kieran come in as head of goalkeeping, which is a weak point for us previously.
Yeah.
So he's overseeing all the goalkeepers now and can implement ILPs with all the keepers. So we're giving great data and feedback there. And video analysis, Paul O'Donovan is leading that. So you're trying to give autonomy to all these departments to kind of run it. And I suppose from my point of view, then to help in any way I can from overlooking everything, you know.
But it must be great for the young lads now to see, first of all, so many players in the first team. Like, was it five of them last week alone? 15, 16, 17, 18 and 19 year old playing like at the cross. That must be brilliant for the other lads thinking, if they can do it, we can do it.
Absolutely. And I think even the kids, when they come in, I suppose like at 14, we have a chat and we explain to him how the development plan and how the pathway is going to look.
Yeah.
And he explained to parents too that, look, this is how we do things here.
Yeah.
If we win, great. Especially at 14s, 15s, but the focus is on style of play. Style of play. Because, winning is important to the players, which we want them to want to win.
Yeah.
But I suppose from the us and myself to the coaching staff is, how did we play? You know, what style of football did we play? Because we're trying to develop these players individually that potentially they're either going to be an international player, first team player, or potentially some player that you could sell down the line. But also the players that don't get to that level have a good understanding of the game. And even, you know, the environment, you know, we have a value wheel that we have at the club, and I always, people take the mick out of me because they get great use out of it all the time for all the signings of players and stuff. But if you look at the values that we have on the wheel, there's a little comment about what a player has said, what the value means to them. So it's come from the players as well.
Yeah.
So that's important, I think, from when players come in, they understand how we do things, how to behave, you know, how to be around in hotels, you know. Like the biggest thing I get from when we go away is feedback from hotel. Geez, your kids were amazing. You know, they really behaved themselves well. And I take a lot from that, as well as obviously if they perform well in the pitch.
Brilliant, like,
And I think generally that comes as well from, we've got some fantastic people for us, but great coaches at each age level now. You know, we've great experience. You know, you look who we have from the 20s now, you've Greg Yelverton coming in as 20s manager. You've Colin Birmingham, who's really progressed into a fantastic coach with the 17s, and obviously great experience, Steve O'Mahony with the 15s, and Lee Moore now is kind of undertaking a kind of head role coach with the 14s. So like, I think, you know, when you have good people in charge of the groups who are age appropriate to, that understand at 14s development, 15s development, 17s, now we're creeping into competitively wanting to win along with the style of play, and then at under 20s, they need to understand how to win, but still the style of play is backing everything up as well.
And their season's only after kicking off, isn't it?
Yeah, we just started now last week. So I think bar the 17s whose game was cancelled, they all got off the mark.
And like, you know, like they must be excited as well when they see some of the previous, I suppose, academy graduates doing so well in the UK and in France. There's huge success stories at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, the academy graduates line has been there long before me and even Colin. You know, there's been, like, you look back in the day, and even within the first team players, that we say graduates too, like, it's important that we are looking at graduates that come into our first team as well.
Of course.
And what I feel now, which is important, is that players are seeing the value of staying here a little bit longer.
Yeah.
I think with Tim coming in this year, like, as you mentioned about the team against Kerry for the first home game, like, there's a lot of bravery in that too, to say, they're good players, but I'm willing to give them the opportunity. And fair to them, I think the boys relished with, you know, being given that confidence as well. So, look, that's important that we're aligned from myself to Tim to all the age groups as well, obviously. But when you have a manager who's going to say, look, I'll throw him in and give him an opportunity, that's huge as well. And I think, as you mentioned then, for the other players looking around going, hopefully that gives them the hunger to go, I want to be the next one.
I want to be, yeah. And I'm sure you probably see that. But do you scout then as well? Like, or is it a case that you just do trials for the under 13s, 14s of the people who are already on, let's say, Kennedy Cup squads?
Yeah.
And then that's it? Or how does it work?
So basically, from this period at the moment, probably till we bring him in the summer, I myself look at a lot of the Centre of Excellence, but also try and get around to watch, you know, schoolboy football.
Okay.
Not just in Cork, but try and get to maybe Limerick and outside of around the areas as well. But yeah, look, I suppose it's hard to get a big scouting network. It's trying to find people that have the time to do it as well.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't ask my coaches, obviously they're 3 nights a week at the moment, as well as organising sessions and looking at video.
Which is hard.
Video work, so it's hard. But yeah, look, I suppose when they come in at 13s, we commit to them being here for 2.5 years then. I think it's only fair now that when you bring in a player that you're not in and out at that age. I think there's just too much mentally. I think that's very tough.
Yeah.
So we need to do our work right too, that when we you know, bring them in and are willing to sign them at, I suppose, 13 and a half, that they will be with us until the end of the under 15 season, unless they want to leave themselves within that period. So I think 2.5 years is a good period of time to assess where players are at. And also to have given them a fair opportunity, you know.
And what's the relationship with the schoolboys teams then? Because I know in the past, it was a bit delicate. It felt like that, you know, they were being taken off them. But is it seen as much more natural progress now? Or
I think so. I think when you look at it at the moment now is that, you know, there's an understanding that come the summer transfer window that they'll know who we're looking to bring in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of changed from, I think previous year, it was taking them at Christmas, whereas halfway through their season, with the seasons obviously not aligned. So I could understand the frustration from the club's point of view that they were like, well, we're halfway through our season. You're going to take four from us. And all of a sudden our squad is depleted. And that was the last thing we wanted to do, to be honest. But it was the circumstances of, at the end of the day, we want to give the players an opportunity. But because our leagues aren't aligned, and I think this is the bigger conversation that's been had at the moment about aligning the leagues for everyone. Which from my point of view makes sense, because it stops any sort of uncertainty or who's coming and going. Everyone's very clear. And look, I think everything you do as well has to be done properly through the clubs, emailing the clubs saying, look, we want to invite this player and that player in. I think I'd like to think that we do things right that way in terms of making sure everything is going through the right channels to bring in players as well.
So like people listening to this, you know, if they want to try and help, I know you put up something the other day on LinkedIn, like sponsorship opportunities with the academy. Is that one of the main things that you're looking for? It's kind of like to get the lads abroad playing against other teams and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, look, I suppose it's when you sit down and look at the cost every year, like we're spending far more money than we're bringing in.
Yeah.
And that's the reality. And look, we're still obviously with the government situation waiting on funding there, but I suppose we're just trying to be proactive as well. Yeah. And I'm very lucky with Dermot, to be honest. I know he's probably sick of me, but like, you know, generally if I go to Dermot with a reason for why I need funds and money, if I have a fair reason for it, and then he gets an understanding of that, he's been very good to me and to the academy from that point of view. But to kind of kick things on, and that's what we're always trying to do. I mean, we've some fantastic qualified coaches, strength and conditioning coaches, you name it, everyone that we have within our academy are really qualified in their roles. But, you know, because the budget is what it is, and, you know, in fairness to Dermot, it's a good budget to try and give, you know, expenses to people.
Yeah.
Like for what they're doing and what I'm asking, it's not very sustainable for coaches to be there for the long term.
Mm.
And that's where we need to improve from that aspect. And obviously, the trips point of view, you know, taking these players away, you know, I'm saying there with all the clubs we went to, which was great, but that was funded from the parents' point of view. Again, they were happy to do it. And obviously areas where players and parents couldn't afford it, we obviously as a club filled that void as well. But like, you know, that's kind of areas that, you know, it's invaluable for a kid that will never play the game at a high level, that when they look back and go, I was over at Benfica when I was that age.
Yeah.
And a memory they'll have forever. And that's huge. But also the player that went there impressed, and now these kind of clubs are starting to go, we're looking to give him an opportunity to go there.
Yeah.
So there's loads of different aspects of the importance of it. But it's also putting our best foot forward, going Cork City Football Club. Yeah, we'll invite them over for a tournament. we respect the level they're at. And it brings the respect of the League of Ireland up hugely as well. Because don't get me wrong, we have good players. Mm. We have good coaches. Facilities, yeah, huge issue. And for me, from the club point of view, I've been here as a player. I came back at 20. Mm. I'm 41 now. On and off, I've been with the club for that period of time.
Yeah.
We still don't have a home.
Yeah.
Like
proper training facility. Yeah, and stuff. It, yeah.
It's just... For me,
there's been a couple of pipe dreams over the years and never happened.
Yeah, and look, it's something we're obviously working on, and obviously within the club, we're always looking at different options and things to make that achievable. But it'll be to my last dying breath something that happens here. Yeah. I can envision driving in to Cork City FC Academy, brilliant. Cork City FC football club, and looking at a state of the art facility. So it's how we get to that point, and look, hopefully with support from. Government as well.
Probably a partnership thing with government and a few other things. You can't do it by yourself.
No, exactly. Yeah. But look, I think the will is there. I think at the moment there obviously is a drive within the country from the League of Ireland perspective, grassroots perspective, to kind of invest heavily, to kind of match what's on the pitch off the pitch, if you know what I mean.
Are you looking to become the best in class for this country?
Absolutely.
You know?
And that's what you have to strive for, you know. Every year, and I'd say poor Erica's head is wrecked because I'm always saying, right, where can we take this team? Where are we going to take that team? So we've great people behind the scenes like Erica and Anna, you know, they're always very open to new ideas and ways to which to improve the academy as well. But look, we're in a good place. As I said, we've got great talent coming through from boys and girls. Obviously, I speak a lot with Danny as well, and like the work Danny's trying to do behind the scenes for the girls as well is huge. And, you know, when you're that passionate about wanting to make things better, it can become infectious to try and get people to come the same way you're going, you know?
And it's nice that you have the two of you as well that played with the club, know what it's like to play for the club as well. And you kind of want them to do the same. Like, you know, you're trying to encourage the next generation and they'll go and do more. And, you know, it's nice.
Yeah, listen, I think throughout the club, it's important that you always have that kind of core group of people that understand the value of playing for the club, the importance of putting on the jersey, and genuinely feel that.
Yeah.
Like you've Dan Murray there, who like is Mr. Cork City in lots of ways. Like if I asked Dan tomorrow to do the 14s or the 20s, he's involved with the 20s as a head coach, but he will do anything. He loves the club. He has been brilliant. He's obviously involved with the first team towards the end of the season last year. But like just good people who understand what it means to be at this club.
Yeah.
And I think to be able to express that to the kids coming in the door is invaluable.
So usually we put out a question on our Instagram to get some questions every week from the guests. And we got a couple in this one. So the first one came from Phil. What was your best memory from games at the Cross?
My best memory is probably scoring that goal in 2005 and people are always like, oh, he's gone about it again. But especially Eric in the office. I just remember the moment. I can still remember Dennis Beacon getting down the line. He's pulled it back. I've kind of come across an area I probably shouldn't have been in. And I just locked the ankle and it trickled into the far corner. And as I was watching it going in, I say by the time I hit the net, I was nearly in the shed because I just knew it was going in. Yeah. And I just remember the euphoria. That moment, and even I could feel, I think it was John O'Flynn and Joe Gamble behind me, and even through their bodies I could feel the relief because it was like, that's it. 2-0.
Yeah.
We've won the league. No, there was still 20 minutes to go.
And it could have changed.
Chance. Yeah. But it was just
sure, it's hard to beat a memory like that.
No,
really.
You can't. I won't.
No, although one of your previous teammates has sent in a message asking So Stephen Beats said, could Liam please describe the goal he scored against Malmo? He said, I haven't heard about it in a while.
Yeah, so listen, Stephen Beattie, what a man. He's too busy selling houses now, that's his problem. But listen, Stephen, it was a special moment as well, obviously. I think it was Neil Fenn was the person who crossed the ball to the back stick and actually... Great finish, left foot, bomb corner, ran off to the crowd. I remember being in the far end, think some of them were sober, most of them weren't. But that was a great day. We'd won at home. I remember going over to Malmo and it was all a case of that they were going to beat us 5-0, that it was a complete one off day for them. But to beat them over there as well was kind of the icing on the cake for us. And again, gave us the belief that we can match these teams. It was a special time.
Another one is from Sean. Who was the best player that you ever played against?
Best player I ever played against? I have to think about that one. Caught me off guard with that one. Best player I played against? I suppose the best player that I played against when he was young was probably Wayne Rooney. He'd come into Everton's... he was at Everton's under-19s. So I think he was about 15.
Yeah.
And we were like, who is this fella? And he came on half... It was a semi-final of the under-19 Premier League. Kind of... I don't know what semi-final anyway, but...
Yeah.
He came on after about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And we were all looking at him going, oh my God, who is this fella? Like, he was just pushing people out of the way.
Was he like a little bull at the time? Because he always probably felt like that in the Premier League as well, didn't he?
He looked like he is, I'd say, from Burton nearly. Like, you know what I mean? He's just an animal. But
get
like,
out of my way, kind
just
of thing.
Even like spraying balls 40 yards, you're like just thinking, this player is the most incredible player I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And that was he was very young. I was obviously under 19.
Yeah.
But it was just, and it was only afterwards, it was like, who was your man? Like everyone literally went, who was your man? You know?
He isn't like, even at a young age.
Even at that age.
Yeah.
I think even at that age is even more incredible because I suppose you always look at a 15-year-old, you know, I know people at the moment look at Jaden Huma and stuff going, he's 15, like, you know?
Yeah.
So it's nearly a shock factor straight away, like, you know?
Yeah. No, it's fantastic to be able to even recall something like that, you know, so and then see the progress after.
Yeah. Incredible, like incredible. But you would have said that day, I know, and the one thing I hate when I hear people say, oh, he'll definitely make it because there's so many variables that come into play. But with him that day, if someone said that to you, you would have gone, oh, without a doubt, our injury, like he's headed for greatness. Like.
Well, Liam, thanks a million for coming in. It's been a fantastic journey through your career with the club, but... I'm excited to see what the academy get up to this season as well. And best of luck with the year ahead.
Cheers, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that was a fascinating listen, wasn't it?
It was hearing back right to when he was at Nottingham Forest to coming back to City and leaving City and coming back to City again. And he's, you know, he said he's been to Australia and America. He's seen a lot of the world as well.
Yes, and that, do you know what? That helps all those young players because he's able to talk to them about the experience he's had. And he's had highs and lows as well. And he knows what it's like.
Exactly. Yeah, he knows he doesn't just have experience of being in the League of Ireland. He has English League experience playing with players, like he said, that have either, you know, he played with them or against them that have gone on to be Premier League players, Premier League legends like Wayne Rooney. Like that was incredible.
To play against when he was only 15. Like,
But our young players now know that, you know, he's been there, done that. And he has the advice he can give them is invaluable.
No, I think people will get a lot out of that. You said you had a second interview as well.
Yeah, with Mr. Welly. So he's our ELOI player, a Cork City player that a lot of supporters might not actually know of. But yeah, we'll hear from him now. Right, so I'm joined by, as I said earlier, a Cork City player that a lot of supporters might not actually even know plays for Cork City. He's our esports player. The ELOI, as I said, kicks off tonight. Ciarán Walsh, also known as Mr. Welly, has been our esports player since 2021. So Welly, for people who don't know much about what esports is or what the ELOI is, just tell us what it is and what it entails.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on and thanks for having me as a Cork City representative for so long now. It's been a pleasure. And so I suppose esports in Ireland, essentially, the E-League of Ireland, it just runs, you know, similar to the actual leagues, except we're broken up into four groups of five. So we have all 20 teams from the first and second divisions represented. And we play as Cork City as such, with a few extras. We've got Cristiano Ronaldo in a Cork City jersey on Ultimate Team. But all 20 clubs play. And we have finals then in April. So it's just like the normal league, except we're here on the consoles.
The first thing people are listening to this are going to pick up on now is that's not a Cork accent. So you're from Monaghan yourself.
Yeah.
How does a fella from Monaghan end up down here in Cork? And representing Cork City here.
That's a good question. I suppose we have to track it right the way back when the first ELOI was announced. I suppose my first contact was actually with you, and we held the tournament to see who would represent Cork City. Look, I'm sure there was a few locals who are very passionate about representing the club, but I'd like to think at this stage now you've adopted me as one of your own. And it's amazing that it's come to this. We're obviously, I'm in Cork at the minute in our esports academy. So, yeah, I'd like to think I'm a bit of an adopted Cork man at this stage.
Down here enough anyway. We still haven't got you to, you've been to the Cross, but not there for a match. So that's next on the list.
Yeah. I've been a few times. But look, I'd love to go to a match. Obviously, I can feel it online as well. You know, it's the best fans in the country. And even if I'm not experiencing that in the Cross every Friday, I certainly feel it online. Always loads of support and messages from all the fans. And I really appreciate that.
Just with the kicking off tonight, so the first year came second, lost out in the final. You were disappointed last year, you went out earlier than you would have liked. So is the goal this year to go and win the whole thing?
Yeah, I suppose I've been promising it for a while now. Look, there wasn't much expectation in that first year, and we came second. Last year, top four. I felt I was a lot better than that last year, but this is definitely my best year. I've never been as well set up with practice and everything up to this point. So look, I'm really excited to compete. We're back onto Ultimate Team now as well, which is proper competitive mode. Look, I'm really excited. It's a pleasure to pull on this jersey, and I really want to deliver that trophy to the Cross.
First game tonight, if anyone wants to watch that, you'll be streaming on your Twitch channel as usual.
Yeah, that's twitch.tv/Mr_Welly. Yeah.
Best of luck.
Yeah, I think people are going to be fascinated at that, because I'd say there's a lot of listeners that don't get that whole concept. So I think maybe that's going to help them a bit, because they're like, oh, you're playing in a league and you're playing on a game.
So, exactly. It's a different world, and it's something that, like, a lot of people play FIFA and they might not even know about this competitive side of it. So it's interesting to hear that and the perspective of how the different clubs are represented, even the clubs that aren't in the game, that they still have a player representing them playing in the E-League of Ireland. But it's, as I said, a Cork City player that a lot of City fans may not have ever heard of. Yeah. And he's been representing us now for...
Another aspect of the club that people, you know, there's so many different, whether Liam was talking about all the academy teams, you're talking about, you know, someone playing FIFA for the club. We're talking about the amputee team earlier on, and we still have the women's teams to come yet, and the girls teams and all that. There's so many different aspects.
Exactly. It isn't just a first team on a Friday night. It's those days are gone. Cork City is much more than, you know, the 11 lads on the pitch in Turner's Cross on a Friday night.
We do have a big game coming up Friday night, second game of the season. Our college buddies are coming down from Dublin.
The students are coming down with an experienced player with them this time. Ronan Finn is with them, who has won countless leagues with Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk. But the main thing is we're back. We're back at Turner's Cross. Massive crowd last time out against Kerry. So if we get a decent crowd again this one, we'll all be delighted. The atmosphere should be good as well.
What should we expect from UCD?
That'll be a tricky one. UCD would have been, from what, if you're reading the articles and listening to the bookies and stuff, it's UCD and Wexford and Bray will be the big clubs this year. In the first division. So UCD will be a tough one. Finn Harps was tough last week. So this is another challenge on from that. A couple of players there like Ronan Finn that I mentioned, that, you know, recognisable names there, who have been there and done that in the League of Ireland. So that'll be a difficult one.
They'll have good young players as well, won't they?
They do, yeah. They're one of those clubs who, you know, they'll have a lot of young players who they could end up losing in the July transfer window, be it to another League of Ireland club, or their college year might be finished, so they could be leaving the country and stuff like that. So
they do.
They always have young players. They have a new manager this year as well. Andy Moyler had been there for a couple of years, and they have a new guy in charge this year. It's his first season. So familiar but different, because it will be a different UCD to what we're usually seeing.
Yeah, like it's going to be an interesting one, but we can't take any game for granted. Like, I mean, some people will automatically assume we're going to win every match because we're selling out the Cross, but you're up against good teams here. Like,
absolutely you are. Yeah, Nathan Wood touched on it last week, that people will say, oh, Cork City will win every week, but the players still have to go and do it. And they all know that, and that's an important side of it as well, which we all know they're fully capable of doing. So that's it. Yeah, we have to go out now, beat them on Friday night, hopefully, in front of another good crowd at Turner's Cross. Tickets for that one are on sale as well. Links are on our social media. And
it's cheaper to buy in advance.
Cheaper to buy in advance as well.
€15 versus €20 at the gate. Exactly. So you'll be warned in advance.
Everything is a fiver more expensive at the gate. So
But you could use that fiver to buy the programme.
You can. match program inside the ground. City Edition is back. Some clubs have moved away from physical match programs and they're doing just digital.
But we have printed still.
We haven't. We're still doing the printed ones. There's a team of volunteers there that put the content together for that.
Is it many volunteers?
Volunteers. The content is incredible. John Sheehan, John Sportrits on social media, is doing the covers for us again this year. Don't know if you saw the Sean Murray one last week, but it was absolutely incredible again.
And John has worked with some of the biggest clubs in Europe, in fairness to him.
John has done Man United stuff, Man City stuff, UFC stuff.
Yeah.
He'll tell you himself that the cherry on top of everything he's done is the match program at Cork City and the stuff he does for us. But John's a Cork City fan, and you know, having him willing to do that for us is incredible.
I know, that's fantastic.
It is, yeah. Yeah, you can save your €5 by getting your ticket earlier and pick yourself up a match program when you get there.
Yeah, look, I presume there's loads of academy games again next weekend as well.
There is, yeah. I don't have the fixtures for those just yet, but we'll have those on our social media over the next day or two. And the week after, then the women's team are kicking off.
Yeah.
So they're at home to Piemont on the 9th of March.
So we'll get someone in from them next week, I think, to preview the season.
We'll have Danny Murphy in next week, and we'll try and get a player in as well. Tickets for the Piemont game are on sale. Women's season tickets are on sale as well. So if you're planning on going to a couple of women's games this season, look into the season ticket. It's incredible value. It's €79 for adults for the year. Children's season tickets are free, which is brilliant as well. But
and can you still buy the season ticket for the club itself? For the first team?
You can. Men's first team season ticket is still available. It's not too late.
There's only one match gone.
Exactly. There's only one match gone. They're still available.
And that guarantees your seat for the season then.
It does. You get your ticket no matter what. When it comes to hopefully some big games at the end of the year when tickets are in. When tickets are in high demand, you'll have your seat guaranteed. So yeah, they're still available as well. CorkCityFC.ie/season tickets for those.
Brilliant. Well, look, we're looking forward to another week ahead. And make sure if you're listening to this, don't forget to press that subscribe button, because that's important, because you'll get the notification of when our next release is out.
Exactly. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, wherever it is, give us a follow. Give us a rating as well, actually, because those really help with the chart position. We're still in the top 100 on Spotify in Ireland. It's class.
I thought we would have fallen up, but no, we're still there.
We're still there. So if you haven't already, leave us a rating and that'll help with that massively.
Well, thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you again next week.
See you next week.